We have an update on the Los Angeles County restaurant story that we talked about last hour on Air Talk. Jot Condi of the California Restaurant Association joined us from the courthouse where the Restaurant Association was trying to block Los Angeles County's implementation of a ban on in-person dining starting tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. A Los Angeles judge has rejected that request by the California Restaurant Association. The lawsuit challenging the ban continues, but the ban will go into effect tomorrow night at 10 o'clock as an L.A. judge rejected a request by the California Restaurant Association for an immediate block on that restriction going into effect. Well, in the months since colleges and universities returned to campuses for the fall semester, a number of schools have had to revert back to online classes because of COVID-19 outbreaks, but not Duke University. The school brought back freshmen, sophomores, some upperclassmen, and all of its graduate students to the Durham, North Carolina campus. And it seems that its in-person classes and on-campus living has been pretty safe. Since August 2nd, the school has implemented a thorough testing, tracking, and surveillance program for more than 10,000 students. And this while Duke students live in communal dorms, play sports, even throw parties. We're going to talk about what the school has done. Other schools like Cornell University and Ithaca, New York, have used mathematical virus modeling to develop their plan. Joining us to talk about these success stories, as our schools, of course, here in Southern California have not opened for on-campus learning, is Duke University VP for Public Affairs and Governmental Relations, Michael Schoenfeld. Thank you very much, Michael, for being with us. Elaborate a bit on how Duke is using testing and contact tracing to keep any sort of positive tests from a large-scale outbreak.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Delighted to be here. I do want to correct one thing. I'm not sure where you got the notion that Duke students were throwing parties, but they haven't been, and that's been one of the factors in our success. The university implemented back in early September something called pooled surveillance testing, which meant that we were doing using mathematical models. Our biologists were to determine where the most vulnerable areas of students and populations on campus and off campus would be, and we're using pooled testing, which is a lot less expensive and less places less of a demand on the testing system to ultimately test every Duke student, undergraduate and graduate, at least once a week, and in some cases several times a week if they were in a particularly vulnerable area. That combined with contact tracing and with some very strong and very united behavioral activity like masking, universal masking, like distancing, and like de-densifying the campus, where we only had about half the number of students living on campus, as is normally the case, has led to what is, for the most part, as of today, the last day of finals, a very successful semester.
And have there been other schools checking in with what you're doing to consider replicating the kind of protocols you have at Duke?
Well, Larry, if you've seen one university, you've seen one university. So what we have done is partially unique to Duke. We were able to implement this testing regimen where we were doing between 15 and 18,000 tests a week through our Human Vaccine Institute. And we had a fairly small and concentrated, small being about 6,500 or so, undergraduate student body that was both on campus and in the area, and they all were very committed to being on campus. So the adherence to masking, to distancing, cutting down significantly, if not entirely, on events, all of those things, very limited indoor dining. All of those things helped contribute to the situation at Duke. Hard to know if you can replicate it at other places, but with the resources and with the commitment, you can. I imagine you can certainly try.
We're talking with Duke University Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations, Michael Schoenfeld. We're talking about a story from the Los Angeles Times by Melissa Healy, in which she highlights Duke University and how it's been able to have such a high percentage of its students back on campus for classes, living in dormitories, and control the spread of COVID-19. Mr. Schoenfeld, what about doing pool testing? Let's talk a little bit about that, because this is one of the things that's been touted, is even monitoring the wastewater from dormitories to try and get a sense through some of the larger scale testing what might be going on in pockets of the school. How much have you employed that?
Sure. We did not use wastewater testing. Pool testing is very, very different. It basically means that you put together, five samples into a single pool. So five individuals would provide a sample. It would go into a single pool or test tube or whatever, and run through the system in our Human Vaccine Institute. If there was any, if any of those pools were indicated some level of COVID, then the lab could actually pull out each of the samples and test them individually. So you could isolate a single person, and that test would then go through the clinical testing regimen, which is more precise, and then would inform the individual who was positive, but then more importantly, or equally important, gave us an idea of where there might be positive exposure. So that's when our contact tracers went into action. So if somebody tested positive, we would know immediately who was around them, who was testing with them, where they were living, and then we could redeploy testing to that particular area. So it worked, again, with this population,
yeah.
And with a very high level of adherence, it worked out very, very well for us.
And what made you decide not to use the wastewater testing to get a larger scale sense and narrow down from there?
Well, we did have the pool testing system in place. Wastewater testing requires the infrastructure, not all of our dorm facility. We have a number of dorms. We don't have very large dorms. We have a number of very small dorms. So it would have required a tremendous amount of essentially reverse engineering. We may look at that. We are looking at that right now for some areas for the spring. But in terms of the return on the investment and the efficiency and the efficacy, we went with pool testing. Pool testing and tracing together.
Thank you so much, Mr. Schoenfeld. We appreciate your being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Michael Schoenfeld, Chief Communications Officer and Vice President at Duke University. Also with us from Cornell University, which has used some fascinating ways of monitoring COVID-19 on the campus. Peter Frazier is Associate Professor of Operations Research and Information Engineering at the Ivy League School. He helped design a program that allowed students to return to the school's campus for the fall semester. Professor Frazier, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Describe the modeling that you did to try and understand the potential spread of COVID-19 when positive cases occurred.
Sure, absolutely. We have a mathematical model that uses techniques from epidemiology, something called a stochastic compartmental simulation. And essentially what it does is, in simulation, it keeps track of the number of people in different groups. Probably the most important group to keep track of are the people that are infectious with COVID-19. Other groups would include people that have never been exposed and so are susceptible to the disease, as well as people who have already been exposed and are recovered and hopefully are immune. And then this type of simulation does is it simulates interactions between everybody on campus, between infectious people in particular and susceptible people, in order to understand the rate at which new people are infected and how that depends on other information about those individuals, such as are they an undergraduate? Are they a graduate student? Are they staff, faculty? You know, do they live in a residence hall? Do they live off campus? Do they live in a fraternity house or a sorority house?
So the rate of transmission looks terrific. You have fewer than 200 on-campus coronavirus infections to date, and that's much less than had been projected in the initial model. What happened?
You know, things worked out better than I had feared. There were a couple of things that happened. Number one, in our modeling that we did over the summer, when we had uncertainty about what might happen, we wherever possible went the safe road. So if we weren't sure, then we did as much as we could in order to put extra interventions in place so that, if transmission in a particular group was at the upper range of what we were anticipating, we would still be able to control it. In addition to that, after we made our initial projections in the early part of the summer, the middle part of the summer, we continued to work harder in order to develop additional interventions. One thing that we put in place after we made our initial estimates of what would happen if we reopened is that we developed a new kind of contact tracing that we call adaptive testing. Usually the way that contact tracing works is that the public health department would talk to a positive individual and would ask them, where have you been? Who have you come into contact with? Where contact here means that you've been 6 feet or less from another person for 15 minutes or more. So someone that you'd, mm-hmm. That you just said hello to wouldn't be in there. Yeah. So what we do with adaptive testing is if someone who lives in a fraternity tests positive, we would test everybody who lives in that fraternity house. We would also test other members of that fraternity who don't live in that fraternity house, even if they're not considered to be close contacts. We do the same thing with sports teams, floors in a residence hall, a couple of other types of organizations.
So farther reaching of contact tracing, even if you don't have a direct account of some, what would be an obvious way for the virus to be transmitted. Let me bring into the conversation from Davidson College's College Crisis Initiative, the director of it, Christopher Marsicano. Thank you very much, Mr. Marsicano. You look at what different colleges or universities are doing to respond, and you look at disasters generally to sort of, see response. What are you learning about the ways that schools are dealing with this?
Well, first, Larry, thanks so much for inviting me on to speak. I have to say we've learned quite a bit that colleges and universities, which tend to be fairly small, C, conservative, resistant to change institutions, have just had to change in fall 2020 due to COVID-19. And the innovations that we've seen from places like Cornell and Duke in terms of creating strong testing protocols have just been astounding. So while so many institutions in your listening area made the decision to go online and stay online in fall 2020, we have a number of institutions that welcome students back to their campuses that are making it work with relatively low case counts.
And I should mention that, for at least some of these schools, I think in Southern California, had they been allowed to open, I think some of them would, at least with limited student population all, but because of the health guidelines, they really were not able to do that. And who knows if they would have been able to keep students on campus with the outbreaks we've had here, even if they would have done that. But I do wonder about, the testing that we were hearing about with Duke. Is there a sufficient amount of testing available for schools to adopt that program across the board?
So I think it's really important to point out that Duke's testing program is particularly sophisticated. This is surveillance testing using models that change every day based on the conditions on the ground, particularly contact tracing. So it's not random testing, which is what we see a lot of institutions doing. So on average, every Duke student is tested at least once a week, but some are going to be tested more if they're in a vulnerable area or population, as it sounds like is the case at Cornell as well. What is good about this testing plan? What is sort of especially exciting about the Duke plan is that it does, using that pooled model, reduce the overall cost of testing. We've got about 120 institutions across the country that are testing every student every week. Those institutions tend to be small liberal arts colleges like my own employer and alma mater, Davidson, but also Bowdoin and Colby. Those institutions can handle it because of their large endowments and their sort of financial strength, but other institutions may not be able to pull off testing a student at $100 per student per test per week. And so what Duke's sort of pooled model has allowed, or at least shown a roadmap to having a cheaper, more clear testing protocol in the future for institutions that may have some financial stress right now.
Yeah, there's so many smaller colleges that are religious affiliates that just don't have the kind of deep pockets that you're describing. And for them, I wonder if there'd be any way, they probably have to do some sort of special fundraiser or something to be able to do this.
Absolutely. I mean, institutions, the dirty secret in American higher education is that no one pays the full price of tuition. That price, that sticker price that some students pay the full tuition of, is not the full cost of attendance. And so institutions rely heavily on revenue coming in from tuition. Most institutions do. Places like Duke and Cornell, certainly that's a nice benefit to the budget, but their endowments are strong enough to weather these storms. These small institutions that you're mentioning, Larry, would certainly need to do a fundraising program, but not just small institutions.
Yeah.
We saw early in the semester institutions like Purdue University having a fundraising plan simply for masks and plexiglass in the classroom. So even large institutions, the cost of testing, certainly every student every week, is just prohibitive right now.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. That's the director of the College Crisis Initiative, which he founded at Davidson College, Christopher Marsicano. Also, our thanks to Professor Peter Frazier of Cornell University, who helped design a program allowing students to return to campus for the fall of this past or just concluding 2020 semester. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. We're going to stay on the subject of higher education, but focus on the college entrance essay and the weight that has this year. And of course, the very different environment in which high school seniors are going to be writing that essay. That's our focus when we come back on Air Talk on KPCC.